Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. I am your host, Dan Roberts. We are continuing our bi-week series here as the Bills maybe gloriously don't play this Sunday after a rough two-game stretch. We got a chance to check in with our friend Mike Kajowski, a.k.a. Mr. Brightside, give us a positive take on our last episode about where he feels like the Bills stand. And now we're going to check in with another one of our illustrious guest co-hosts, one Logan DeLutis. Logan, as you may remember from our preseason series, an avid Giants fan. We made the promise to him earlier in that episode that once Jackson Dart got the start, we would bring him back on the pod. And it just so happens the Bills don't have football. The Giants do this weekend. So I thought it'd be a great time to bring Logan back and talk about how he's feeling about the G-men and their new potentially generational game changer in Jackson Dart. Logan, how you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. It's a pleasure to be back.
Awesome, man. It's great to have you back. And listen, as I alluded to, we had promised to bring you back when the Dart era began for the New York Giants. I just don't think you and I thought it was going to be this soon. We had actually talked about in that last episode you were on, you know, when is a good time to roll with Dart? Because the offensive line was still looking a little bit shaky. Outside of a couple of key pieces on offense, it didn't really look like the scheme was going to be well tailored to him. And, I mean, you had a murderer's row for a schedule, particularly in the beginning of the year. So we both thought, like, week 10, maybe week 11. But here we are, rolling into week 7. Dart has 3 games under his belt, 2 wins as a starter. And it also looks like he has found his soulmate in Cam Scatabutu, which we will talk about a little bit as well. So here we are. You've got a QB that has more wins than losses since he entered the league in Jackson Dart. Tell me a little bit. I know it's a small sample size, Logan, but what has Dart done so far that has impressed you the most early on?
I think he's just continued what he did in the preseason. I think we kind of touched on this in the previous podcast I was a part of. He's just made overall, for the most part, smart decisions with the football. I think you see a lot of times with these rookie QBs, these early in the NFL QBs, they want to make these big plays, especially the ones that know they can, like a Jackson Dart. He did it a lot of his college career. He made these big flashy plays. I don't think he's trying to force it too much in the NFL. I think he knows he's got to take what he can get, capitalize on what he can capitalize on, and I think he's doing that. And I think it's helping him a lot more than hurting him. That's kind of what I've seen a lot out of him. That's what I saw a lot of in the preseason. And that's kind of what I was hoping to see when he eventually, you know, came onto the scene in the regular season. Like you kind of said, I didn't think it'd be this soon, but he's here. And I think he's just continued to make smart decisions.
I agree with you. And I think that's the thing that stood out to me, too. And it bears in some of the numbers that he's put up early on here as he has entered the league, kind of taking the city and the league in itself by storm. One of the big things that I think is a difference maker for him is his pressure rate. Now, the offensive line has improved its play. Andrew Thomas, who we'll get to in a little bit, his return to the lineup couldn't have been better timed for Dart to get his first starting action as well. But right now, I mean, he is a quarterback that's benefiting from one of the top 10 lowest pressure rates in the league. He's getting the ball out quick, but not too quick. And to your point, he's not forcing it, making dumb decisions down the field. His air yards per target is sitting in the top 10 through 3 games amongst all qualifying starting QBs. But to your point, not a lot of turnover-worthy throws, making good decisions with the ball. He seems to have this innate understanding of knowing when the defense, take what the defense is giving to him, and then also when to push the ball downfield. Made all the more impressive to me in the fact that you guys don't have neighbors in the lineup. And I think Kafka is doing him a lot of favors too, taking advantage of this newfound running attack that you guys have with Cam Scatabu to really spam play action. I always love it when you see a first-time rookie QB. I have an offensive coordinator that just knows how to hit the easy button within the scheme and give him some easy stuff to hit. And Kafka's doing that with play action. As of right now, Jackson Dart is benefiting from a 30.6% play action rate on all plays called. That's good for fourth highest in the league, sucking in a lot of linebackers, making the middle of the field open for him. And this is the piece that I want to talk to you about. It seems like the Giants wide receivers are finding space, and Kafka is playing around with a lot of fun configurations that he wasn't able to do with Russell Wilson. How surprised are you, based on what you saw through the first few games of the season with Wilson versus what you're seeing now with Dart? How surprised are you that the Giants have so quickly tailored the scheme to what he does best?
I think they had it in their back pocket because I think they knew this day was coming.
Yeah.
They were kind of, you know, the rumor mill was kind of spinning with Dart first, you know, had his first start against the Chargers, that they were prepared for this all along. They were practicing with him and running a scheme that was around him all along. So I think, you know, to Mike Kafka and Brian Daboll's credit, I think they knew this day would probably come. And I think they had a scheme pre-built for Jackson Dart, because obviously, as everyone knows, Russell Wilson and Jackson Dart are completely different quarterbacks. Obviously, Jackson Dart liking to use his legs a lot more. Russell Wilson can still use his legs, but he doesn't go to it as often as Jackson Dart obviously does. But again, to answer your question, I think they had this built for Jackson Dart from the beginning. I think everyone kind of had in their back of the mind that Jackson Dart was coming eventually. And again, I give Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka a lot of credit for being ready when he did come, and it wasn't trying to force him into a scheme that Russell Wilson was running that ultimately didn't work for his play style, because we've kind of seen that in the past with Giants QBs. And I'll bring it up because a lot of people have asked me, Daniel Jones being one of them. We had a scheme that didn't work for Daniel Jones, and of course part of it was, you know, the offensive line, and he was pressured all the time, but he's in Indy now with a scheme that works for him, and he's balling, and I'm happy to see it for him. So, yeah, a lot of credit to the coaches for being ready for when Jackson Dart eventually came onto the scene.
Absolutely. And I think Russell Wilson, where he's at this stage of his career too, there were some natural limiting factors, I think, that forced Daboll and Kafka really to not be able to open up the full playbook for him. But when you look at the athletic tools that Dart brings to the table, some of this QB read option stuff that they want to do, although I wish they would put him a little bit less in harm's way sometimes, but it feels like the playbook is fully open. It doesn't feel like they're hiding anything from Dart. It feels like they've got this innate amount of trust in him already so early on to really execute the vision of the offense as they see fit. So, I mean, for Daboll particularly, and we'll get to him at the end of this too, but for a coach on a hot seat, it's got to feel good to have your signal caller in the huddle be someone who can execute your vision of the offense for sure. Speaking of the offense, we had mentioned Malik Nabers has been out of action, going to be missing him for the remainder of the season, which makes so much of the sufficiency in the passing game to me, Logan, all that much more impressive. That being said, you are now on the rookie QB window. And what a lot of teams tend to do is they tend to build out from that by signing some veterans to bigger contracts. You now have opened up a range with salary cap space, having a rookie QB will give you to sign some like middle class veterans that really elevate the floor of this roster as well. And, you know, it sounds like based on a lot of rumors on the interwebs that the Giants are not willing to wait till the offseason to make a lot of that happen. Word is that they are big game hunting, especially this year with Malik Nabers being down for a wide receiver. Names that have been bandied about are Jalen Waddle out of Miami, though I'm not sure Miami, with all the dead cap they would absorb, could move him. But I'm a Bills fan. We moved Stephon Diggs and we ate it, so who knows? Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, both in the New Orleans Saints products, maybe a Jacoby Myers. Do you think the Giants will trade for a wide receiver one? And do you think that helps this team make a playoff push? Or as a fan, now kind of on the precipice of this new era, would you prefer that they just keep the draft capital and keep building the old-fashioned way?
Yeah, I think first talking about will they do it, I think it's a 50-50 shot that they do trade for a receiver. You know, and we've talked about this before. I had wished they went and got a receiver in the offseason to pair with Malik Nabers. Now that Malik Nabers is unfortunately out for the year, and you know, if you can kind of see, I'm paying homage to him with the jersey I have on. But I think it's kind of a moot point now to go and get a receiver when you can't really pair him with Malik Nabers. Yes, I of course would love to see, you know, a Chris Olave, a Waddle with the Giants, but then there's a part of me that would love to see them opposite Malik Nabers and bringing them to their full potential with the Giants. I think Dart and the offense have operated well with the receivers they have. I mean, he went out and played a phenomenal game against the Eagles with a couple of guys we brought up from the practice squad that stepped up big, one being Lil Jordan Humphrey. He stepped up huge. I don't really see a need for us to go make a splash with receiver. I think if we were, I would see how the next couple of weeks go. And if we can win the next couple of weeks and put ourselves at the top end of the NFC East, and you know, it's really looking bright enough to where, okay, maybe the division's kind of wide open. The Eagles are kind of struggling a little bit to really, you know, kind of blow teams out as they have in the past. Games are a little competitive with teams against the Eagles. The Cowboys defense obviously is giving up a ton of points, and if their offense doesn't produce, it's ultimately a loss for them, kind of. And the Commanders, as of now, are looking a little shaky, so I don't want to say the NFC East is open, but again, if the Giants can win the next couple games and kind of get in the mix, then maybe, okay, it's like, oh, wow, we actually have a chance to make the playoffs this year. Do we maybe go get a receiver to kind of make that push? Again, I don't think anyone was expecting us to really push for the playoffs this year. I think with how Shane has drafted in the past, I would prefer to keep the draft capital. I've always been a Shane fan when it comes to our drafts. I think he's done a good job so far with our drafts and getting players we needed to fill out our roster. I think I'd more so like to keep the draft capital. And if, you know, we end the season with a not great record, we get a high draft pick. Maybe it's bad enough to where we can snag a guy like Jeremiah Smith or Ryan Williams high in the draft. And now have that guy across from Malik Nabers on a rookie contract rather than a guy like Waddle, who's got a lot of money associated with him. Chris Olave, despite his concussion issues, you know, was still a good receiver in the league and would demand money. You ultimately have to sign Malik Nabers at some point to an extension. I think it's just a bigger picture of the roster that they have to consider. And is it really the time now to go make a splash for a playoff push?
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. I think the temptation for a GM, I agree with you. Before I say anything else, I agree with you. I think given the stage that the Giants are in this rebuild, the draft capital is super important. Mm-hmm. And they have positions of need that the next couple of drafts in 26 and 27 are really going to have some options for them that are going to fill those needs. I think the only thing, and you kind of did such a good job of laying out what the landscape of the NFC East looks like right now. The only thing you got to keep in the back of your mind if you're a Giants fan is that you've got a GM and a head coach that are basically sort of kind of playing for their jobs this year, right? And if they feel like they're a Chris Olave rental away from getting to the playoffs and what looks like a severely weakened NFC East, I do wonder if the temptation of now and getting that security now bucks what you and I think both agree would be the more reasonable, rational, long-term view to take, which would be keep the draft capital and build that way, right? So super interesting to see how you guys proceed with all that. One of the areas of need you guys don't have is tackle, specifically with Andrew Thomas. His return, dude, could not have been better timed for when you guys rolled out Jackson Dart. And Thomas is absolutely owning everyone that goes up against him off the edge. He is currently recording the 95% pass block win rate, according to ESPN, which is good for sixth in the league amongst qualifying tackles. How do you think Thomas's performance has helped Dart's early success?
I think it's been a tremendous help to his success. Andrew Thomas has played and provided what every fan, coach, quarterback wants for being a tackle that protects your blind side. And that's obviously to win against guys off the edge and keep you from being on the turf. Andrew Thomas has, of course, done a great job in doing so, as you mentioned. And I think Andrew Thomas is kind of the glue to this offensive line. I think Andrew Thomas has not only shown that he's playing at an elevated level, but I think he's also bringing the rest of the line up with him in his return. We kind of saw the line looking a little lost at the beginning when Russ was under center. And, you know, there were a lot of questions as if the line, with all the improvements that Shane has made, is that the offensive line is old, where they can't really keep the quarterback protected. Russ looked like he had no time to sit in the pocket at times. You know, was it going to be another year where our quarterback just gets killed all the time and we can't get the ball out? But it seems like with Andrew Thomas returning that he's kind of brought that line back together. And I mean, not only Andrew Thomas, but I think the rest of the offensive line has played an extremely elevated level that you kind of mentioned earlier. They're top in the league right now as far as allowing pressure. And that's something we've struggled with for years. And it's an important thing to limit when you have a rookie quarterback that's trying to get his feet under him and just perform at a somewhat high level and keep the team competitive. Because I think at the end of the day, that's what people wanted with Jackson Dart when he finally came in, as no one was expecting him to come in and start blowing teams out and throw for a 100-plus passer rating a game and three touchdowns a game. He just wanted to keep the Giants competitive because we knew we had the defense to keep teams out of the end zone and out of scoring. And people just wanted him, you know, myself being one of those people, wanted him to just keep us in games and make smart decisions. So I think a lot of credit to the success of this line is to Andrew Thomas, because I think without him, they kind of seem a little lost, and he's kind of that glue that brings them together. And along with that, again, keeping Jackson Dart on his feet and able to push the ball downfield and make these throws and even have the ability to move out of the pocket and extend plays, because that's important as well. And you see a lot of the elite quarterbacks, and, you know, I'll speak on your own quarterback, Josh Allen, having a line that allows him to extend plays when needed, instead of, you know, nothing's there and now they're panicking and now they're sacked. So it's been a great thing to see this line come together. It's been great to have Andrew Thomas back, and, you know, I kind of hope it stays that way.
Yeah, man. I hope for the sake of your squad it does too. JJ talks about this all the time, the importance of not just talent on the offensive line, but continuity, communication, chemistry. He calls it this preternatural sense to know that the man next to you is going to have his assignment so that you can go 100% on your assignment. And it does feel like that Thomas has been that force multiplier for your guys' offensive line and given you something you really haven't had in the Daboll era, which is functional offensive line play at the point of attack. I mean, you guys are competitive in the trenches in both the run game and in the pass pro game in a way that you just haven't. It feels like, I don't want to get too many of your hopes up, but, like, you know, the Giants still got a ways to go, but it feels like a lot of stuff around the scheme, the personnel, the continuity, the chemistry at various levels is all coming together at just the right time. And sir, it may be at just the right time to save the aforementioned Joe Shane and Brian Daboll from hitting the unemployment line this summer. I know there's a lot of football left, but give me your take. What do you think Shane, even if the season finishes like 6-10, 7 and 9, like whatever it's going to, or 7 and 10, 8 and 9, 9 and 8, whatever it's going to be. Do you feel like Shane has done enough to keep his job past this year?
I think he has. I've always been a fan of Shane. I've never thought for the most part that the Giants' lulls have been on Shane. I think, again, as I mentioned earlier, I think he drafts to fill out this roster. I don't think he makes, you know, a lot of questionable draft picks. Of course, the one thing that will always loom over his head is the decision about Saquon Barkley. But now the big thing is, you know, we have Cam Scadaboo is playing at such a high level now. Does that dark cloud over his head kind of dissipate because we have a guy now that's playing at such a high level? And right now, statistically is playing at a higher level in some stats than Saquon Barkley. You know,
in many metrics he is, yeah.
Yeah, and watching a lot of the Eagles game, Saquon struggled to get a lot of space in the run game and run the ball effectively, whereas Scadaboo hasn't. You know, maybe that dark cloud for fans kind of and even, you know, Mara kind of disappears and, you know, they kind of put that to the side and they focus on, OK, he's done well at building out our roster, making the right decisions. I think there's a couple, you know, other big decisions he can make that can help this team. I think despite our record this year, if the Giants can remain competitive, not lose games they shouldn't lose. Unfortunately, the Saints was a game I thought we shouldn't have lost, and we did. But stay competitive. I think Shane will be fine. Dable, on the other hand.
Yeah, it's okay. This is a safe space.
I don't know with him. I think Mara gotten to the point where he's a little fed up with him. And I know this is the big topic with Dayball now is his outburst with the medical staff and what that's portrayed to the league and the NFLPA and what's going on with that and early rumors where he might even see a suspension for it because the league, of course, is so big around player safety and. You know, the perception was now he's putting Jackson Dart at a risk of getting hurt. I don't know because obviously it's been rough sledding with Dable at the helm. I think he made the right decision this year, and I think we touched on it in our first podcast together is him giving the offense back to Kafka, which obviously again has proved to be of benefit. But I think Mara just kind of has gotten to a limit with him. I'm not sure, no matter how good the Giants do, if Dable can remain the head coach. I just don't know if he's the guy. Yeah, I love his energy. Yeah, I love the fire he brings to the team, but. You know, there's been times this year already where I question a lot of decisions he's made. You know, early games in the year where we're fourth down and deep in the red zone and we're going for it and it's just an atrocious play. We turn the ball over and now we go later in the game and those 3 points are the difference in another drive that could potentially win us the game. You know, I think a lot of that happened a lot in our game against the Chiefs. Dallas was another one where we kick a field goal on one drive. We're not even worried about overtime. And it's decisions like that where, you know, part of you is like, you love the confidence. And then you get to the end of the game and you're like, all right, what the hell? Like, what were we thinking? Go get the points, especially in the first quarter. Like, there's no reason in the first quarter to not take points. Especially against a division rival, especially against a team that's so strong like the Chiefs. So I think the things have just piled up with Dayball where I think Mara's kind of over it and he's ready to move on. But again, I think Shane may be safe no matter what. But it'll definitely be interesting to see, because it's been a topic of conversation after every year with Dable, whether he's safe or not. So I'm interested to see, as anyone, what we're going to do.
Yeah, same. And listen, as a Bills fan, we owe a lot to Dable and everything he did for Allen's development, the development of that offense, helping to turn that team into what it is today. That dude's never going to have to pay for a beer anywhere in Buffalo or the Orchard Park area. But that being said, I wouldn't want him as the head coach of my team. He just brings too much baggage to the table, I think, at this stage in the game. So
yeah, and I think too, there's a lot of guys you see in the NFL who are just better off as coordinators.
Yeah.
One example I'd always think of is Cliff Kingsbury with the Commanders. He went, tried to coach the Cardinals. It wasn't pretty. He's back with the Commanders now as their OC, and he's absolutely thriving. And he calls one of the better offensive schemes in the league with Jaden Daniels. And maybe that's the calling for Dable. Maybe he goes and finds another home as an OC. And I don't wish any ill will on Dable as a coach. I wish him all the success. He brought us to the playoffs 1 year. Obviously I'm hoping he can do it again this year. But I think there could be some obviously possible good coaching candidates coming out of this year. There's always a decent pool of candidates coming out. So, it'll definitely be interesting to see what Mara decides to do.
Yeah. 100%. All right. We are coming close to the end of our time here, Logan. I do want to get your prediction sure to go wrong for your guys. Turns out to be big game against the Broncos this weekend. Uh-huh. But before we do that, you're an avid fantasy football guy. You're involved in one of the most competitive leagues I think I have ever encountered. Tell me a little bit about how fantasy is going for you this year in your league. And are there any tips, tricks, or advice that you want to give our listeners as we embark here on the second third of the season?
As much as I hate to say it, fantasy so far this year has been rough for me. I came out of the draft projected by Yahoo to go 13-1 and win the league. I can most definitely say I will not be going 13-1. Winning the league's obviously no question, but it's been rough for me. I was very confident with my roster to start the year. It's the ebbs and flows of fantasy football. You can guess and predict how a guy is going to do and how a team's going to play all you want preseason, and things just will not go that way. And I've had a lot of that. Devon Achane, the Dolphins' offense looks putrid.
Terrible.
Early on, they failed to give him the ball a lot. Ollie Gordon was getting a lot of work, so that hasn't helped. The Raiders' offense, I have Jacoby Myers, another one. Offense looks horrible. The Ravens, another one. The whole team looks lost. So it's been rough. My team actually put up its year high in points and just shy of 150 last week. So that was a great feeling. So I'm hoping to keep that momentum going into this week. But yeah, it's been rough. I'm trying to stay away from the one chip challenge. I'm ninth in the league right now, I think, out of 12. So, tips and tricks. Oof, I don't know if I'm the one to say this.
Go back and auto draft. Is that the trick?
I know. Obviously, as a lot of fantasy football players know, waiver wire is key. I was fortunate enough to pick up Kamani Vidal last week, and although I didn't start him, he obviously played very well. And obviously, I actually traded him this week for a couple of smaller pieces that I think can help my team with depth. So
nice.
Waiver wire is key to winning championships. I always live by that because there's always gems on the waiver wire every year.
Very nice, man. That's sage advice. I'm still playing my degenerate gambler daily fantasy stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, your tips and tricks and will be lost on me because I'm just basically refreshing my team every week. Much to little effect, right? I would actually kill to be 9 out of 12 given where I'm at this year with that. But yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, best of luck. Hopefully it turns around for you. Before we let you go, Y'all got a big one, right? And I think this is a game that's going to determine a lot of what you guys do at the trade deadline. If you guys take down the Broncos, I think you do maybe make a play for a wide receiver and just hell with it. Go all in and try to make a playoff push in a surprising, vulnerable division. But the Broncos, that's a tall task. While Bo Nix is maybe not what a lot of people thought he was at the beginning of the season, that defense certainly is. That Broncos defense is legit. And it's going to be the biggest test, I think, this revitalized offensive line of yours and this new rookie sensation QB are going to have faced. Mm-hmm. So give it to us quick here, sir. What's your score prediction? How do you think this is going to unfold for your G-men?
Oof. Score prediction? I'm going to go 21-17 Giants.
Damn. All right. Yeah. Now you got to give us details.
Close game. Obviously, I think there's going to be points, but I think defenses are obviously going to reign in this game. I think 21 is the high end of the points scored. I think it's two great defenses with two great pass rushers going at each other. I think it's just going to be a matter of which defense breaks first and who can find a weak point in each other's defense. Broncos are obviously the cream of the crop when it comes to defenses this year. So, like you said, interesting to see how this line will hold up. They're great at getting to the QB. I believe they're first in sacks in the league right now, in part to a huge game they had last week. So, obviously, their secondary with Pat Surtain is phenomenal. So, like you said, it'll be a big test. On the offensive side and the defensive side. Like you said, Bo Nix hasn't lived up to what a lot of people thought he was going to be at the beginning of the year, but their offense is still dangerous. They still have dangerous pieces. So I'm excited. And I get, like you said, it'll be a huge game to kind of decide what the rest of our year looks like.
Yeah, man, for sure. For sure. Listen, Logan, as always, thank you for the time. Mm-hmm. I will be rooting for your G-men this week because every time an AFC playoff contender loses a game, Bills Mafia Super Bowl hopes gets its wings. Yeah. So I'll definitely be rooting for you Giants this weekend. But thank you again, sir, for your time. Much appreciated. And as always, for all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We are back on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.